Sick of procurement bottlenecks, endless back and forth, and last-minute surprises? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly half a million businesses to simplify and automate their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement. You'll know whether spend is approved before you buy, and Bill's AI-powered automation helps reduce errors so you can make purchasing decisions with confidence. Plus, Bill Procurement puts everything you need to match and pay invoices right at your fingertips. So dump your clunky procurement process and keep your business moving and growing with Bill Procurement. Purchase, pay, and on with your day. Right now, score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Just go to bill.com/procurement200. Don't wait. That's bill.com/procurement200.
The cinema specialists are back. And today, John and I are going to be talking about the top 10 movie musicals of all time. This is in honor of the fact that Wicked comes out this month. So John and I know that this, we're getting into the big time holiday blockbuster season. We got Wicked coming out at the end of the month. We have Gladiator 2 coming out at the end of the month. So in 2 weeks on November 18th, you'll be hearing from us as we each rank our top 10 Ridley Scott movies. But today we're going to be doing our top 10 movie musicals. I feel like this has been a fun series so far. We did our top 10 underrated horror movies. We did our top 10 non-English horror movies. So hopefully that got you through spooky season and maybe got you some new movies to watch. And we did our top 10 movies on an island. So this is episode number 5. Is that what that makes this? No, this makes this episode number 4. I can't count. Episode number 5 will be Ridley Scott. But this is episode number 4 of this series. I hope you guys are enjoying it so far. And today we're going to talk about some movie musicals that I'm sure will be better than Wicked, considering Wicked is longer for part 1 than the entire stage play was in general. What in the world is going on? They split the movie in two. And I'm preemptively bitching, okay? What is going on with that?
It's a cash grab. Let's be real. That's what it is. It's them cashing in on the popularity of a musical that's now 15 years old that had a massive, if people forget, when Wicked dropped in like the aughts, it was everywhere.
Oh yeah.
People went crazy for this musical. And you know what, right? Like it's a very good musical. I think it's a little overrated, but it's a good music. It's a good musical. It's fun. It's an interesting take on the whole like Wizard of Oz world and things like that. But I don't know how you stretch out this musical to be more than twice as long as it already is.
Well, and to me, it just feels like what they're doing is they're making it so that the cash grab is obvious, right? Like we know that, but you're taking away what the pizzazz of a musical. Sometimes the best musical is a short to the point musical. Get in, get out, have your songs, move on. And with something like Wicked, that's what worked on the stage. You watched an hour and 10 minutes. You went to break. You watched another hour and 10 minutes. And it was awesome. And I remember it took forever for me to actually see that. Because like, not that we were big theater going people as kids, but I grew up in New Jersey and my parents had always wanted to see it. Huge Wizard of Oz family, as you're all going to find out soon here. And I feel like when they expand on this to this level, they're not adding depth, they're not adding more, they're not adding anything that's actually useful. This is
just true. I guarantee you they are adding an original song so they can get an Oscar nominee.
That will not be good, but will get them that nomination. That's the other important part. You have to say that will not be good. But anyway, well, I'm going to go in with an open mind. You know, there's been a lot of good and bad publicity around that movie already. Take for it what you will. I don't really care. But hey, we're coming in hot here talking about Wicked, the movie that inspired this list. So we got Willie D, who starts it off. I love musicals. Like, I made fun of it for it all the time. And then, you know, I feel like musicals were something that took me a while to get into. And then I was watching AFI's top 100 movies because I wanted to go through all of them. And when I watched that movie, I said, holy shit, there are like a lot of really good musicals out there that you watch as a kid. And maybe as a kid, you're like rolling your eyes a little bit. And then as I started getting older, I started to have a newfound appreciation for if you can get something that just gets stuck in your head, you're doing something right. And so I will start off by saying I wanted to get Once on my list. I don't know if you actually have that on your list, but I just want to start off by saying that. It was going to be on my list, and I ended up cutting it because I haven't seen it in a long time. But if you haven't seen Once, Once is a really unique musical because I listen to the songs from that movie all the time because they're just folk songs. And if you haven't seen Once, check it out. It doesn't have the big set designs and everything that you're going to hear from a lot of what we're going to be talking about in this episode. But I just wanted to mention that one because there's so many layers to what musicals are. And, you know, I've talked so highly about Cabaret and you know, doing Cabaret on election eve right now is pretty interesting. We'll talk about that when we get there. But it's like I feel like as you get older, you might start to get more of an appreciation for musicals because you start to really see what they're doing and what they're pulling off. And to be able to have exposition and tell a story, but tell it through song is really impressive. And sometimes it's told really terribly, but every now and then you get ones that hit, and that's what we're going to be talking about here. Willie D has La La Land, Greatest Showman, Phantom of the Opera, Les Mis are all overrated. Oh, all rated over an 8 for me. At least one of those movies, at least two of those movies, I know for sure will be talked about here.
Yes. I think the thing with musicals, and what's interesting about us discussing top 10 movie musicals, we talked about it with horror movies. Horror movies are very personal, right? Like they appeal to very different people in different ways. I find musicals very similar because there's just so many musicals to choose from, and only so many have actually been made into movies. And sometimes there are good film adaptations of musicals. Sometimes there are mediocre adaptations of film musicals. Sometimes you get Mean Girls, which was not a good adaptation of a movie.
Yeah, I don't know whatsoever. Why you have to bring that up on this pie. Why do we have to think about that? Now I have that stuck in my head of that terrible, terrible song about whoever, what's her name?
Regina.
I am Regina George. God, that movie was.
Oh, that's your own fault. I didn't get stuck in my head. So, but the point being is like, there are so many different types of musicals and they all appeal to very different people. Musicals are one of those things that, depending on when you were first exposed to a certain musical, it can resonate with you a lot differently than other musicals. And one of the interesting things we took into consideration when doing this list is, should we count animated films? Because there are a lot of animated musicals out there. But we both kind of decided, oh, we're just going to be talking about a lot of Disney movies if we end up doing that. So if we left off the animated movies. So if you're... Hopefully when you're watching this and you're like, where's Beauty and the Beast, John? It's in your top 20 movies of all time. It was excluded, not allowed to be on here.
I mean, because if we were going to do that, you'd have to just do top 10 animated movies or animated musicals. Like, it's just, there's too many in those types of movies. So much of it is based on nostalgia and everything like that. So that's just way too hard to do that. There you go. J. Byrne Aquatic, the South Park movie, greatest musical of all time. I mean, that didn't make it's my list, funny. But I do love that movie. That movie's hilarious.
It's pretty funny. I can't deny that. But I think another one thing to keep in mind with these musicals is I think the criteria you and I are approaching this with is probably quite different, Phil. Because I mean, you said, you know, it took you a little while to get more exposed to musicals and stuff like that. I was exposed to musicals at a very young age. I performed in a lot of musicals growing up. And because of that, just looking at my list, my musicals tend to be stage productions that are then brought into film rather than the other way around, rather than movies that become stage productions afterwards. There are a few exceptions to that, of course, but I just noticed that. And especially with like some of my specific preferences of different productions of things, they definitely focus more on like the stage aspect of the musical, because I think it is a very important part of a musical. I think there are other things that to consider, and other things like we're not counting filmed versions of stage productions.
Yeah,
so we don't have any, like, you know, we don't have the 10th anniversary or 25th anniversary of Les Mis on here. We don't have the Hamilton production that's on Disney Plus because it's not a movie musical.
Yeah, that pissed me off when that got nominated for the Golden Globe. I was like, what are we doing?
It's one of those things where it's a big question. But to me, the big thing with musicals, the music in a musical has to progress the plot somehow. Either it's moving the story forward or it's helping grow the character, and it's showing us what the character's thinking about themselves, right? So these are the important things with the criteria that I took into these movie musicals. It's why you're going to see some on here and you're like, really, John? But that's just what I'm thinking. It's also why you have some exclusions. It's why something like All That Jazz didn't make my list, despite the fact that is an absolutely spectacular film. Half that movie's not a musical.
Hey, can we talk about this too? Because what's funny is I think if you go back and you listen, there was an episode of our Top 100 Movies where I actually talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
Where I just watched All That Jazz, and I have that same exact complaint, like almost identical. And it's like coming back to me now that we're sitting here like this. But I even remember saying the ending of that movie, the last musical number of that movie, I Think I'm Gonna Die, is one of the most brilliant musical numbers ever put on
film. Absolutely.
But it's like it's one of the only parts of the movie that's actually a musical.
Mm-hmm.
But that sequence is absolutely unbelievable, untouchable. Like, that sequence is absurdly good. And if you haven't seen it, you got to watch it.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, this is the excitement of musicals. I'm really excited to talk musicals because I love them so much. And there are just so many of them. And I just even seeing all of the people talking about musicals in the comments is so
we're getting blown up. Look at this. I don't have Grease on my list. Do you have Grease on your list? I don't mean to spoil this. Okay.
I
really love Grease. And I thought I was going to have room for it. My list is way better than I thought it was going to be. Not that I didn't think that there were a lot of movie musicals, but like when I cut Once, part of me kind of hurt doing that because I do love that movie, even though I haven't seen it in a long time. And I felt like all of a sudden I was like, wait, there are some movies that I wish I had on this list. And Grease was one of like the last ones I cut too, but I'm sitting here and I'm like, no, I like these movies that are on here better. Mm-hmm. And really what screwed us up is that we figured out that Willy Wonka is a musical when neither one of us had watched it so damn long ago. But anyway.
But I also think we probably are excluding some that some people do count as musicals too. Some very good movies. Like, I mean, I've already mentioned All That Jazz. Inside Llewyn Davis could be argued that it's a musical.
Fuck. Is Inside Llewyn Davis a musical? Because then that just changes my whole list.
I don't think so. But there is definitely like, there's people on the internet
Inside who will play Llewyn musicals. Okay, here's what I will say. Oh, God, because Cabaret is very similar to Inside Llewyn Davis. Okay, here's what I'll say. Every musical number in a musical cannot be on a stage for it to be a musical. That's my criteria. Inside Llewyn Davis, and I know that there's some, but he's always performing for somebody. That is the whole point of Inside Llewyn Davis. So Cabaret, I'm saved because the Tomorrow Belongs to Me scene is not being performed for anybody. That is just a random person getting up and singing. Okay. Because Inside Llewyn Davis, if that was on here, I already screwed up by not putting It Follows as an underrated horror movie.
I know. I just wanted to drop that. But
if Inside Llewyn Davis is a musical, it's my number one. But I'm not counting it as a musical because I think of Inside Llewyn Davis to me is just a drama. Like, I don't consider that movie to be a musical because all of the music is literally just playing an acoustic guitar and singing and whatever. And it's what is that? Diegetic? Is that the word I'm looking for?
Yes. Yeah. It's diegetic music. That's just being performed in the film itself. And is part of the film.
Mm-hmm. I guess Cabaret does that the entire time. I don't care.
I think it's very different too. Because there's no stage production of Inside Llewyn Davis when we really get down to it. So,
Well, there's no stage production of La La Land either.
That's true, but I mean, we'll talk about La La Land when you bring it up.
I guess the other thing too is like in Inside Llewyn Davis, people don't just randomly break into song to forward the plot.
Yes.
Which I think every other one of these movies does, maybe with the exception of Cabaret, but Cabaret is so obviously a musical.
Yes.
Like it's so obviously a musical. I can't just like, because then it would be like, okay, is any movie then about a musician a musical? Because that's what Inside Llewyn Davis is. Like Inside Llewyn
that's
Davis.
That's like saying Almost Famous is a musical. And Almost
Famous then it has to be, right? Because it's about a band and they sing songs.
Yeah.
Spinal Tap is a musical.
Exactly. And that's kind of why I wanted to bring it up. Because the point, it's going to be a point of contention at some point. I know. But I don't feel like those are considered musicals.
Here's a question. What do you all think the worst musical of all time is? And why do you think it's Cats? Thankfully, I never sat down and watched that movie.
Well, I'll just put it this way. Andrew Lloyd Webber likes using the same three songs in every single musical.
Yeah. I do like that Jayburn is roasting Chicago here because I know you're going to like Chicago. Jayburn, I couldn't agree more. Chicago, where did I have that ranked on my This is important. This is what people tune in for.
Are your best picture winners?
Of my best picture winners. It's low, right?
Oh, I would imagine so.
I do not like, let's see where I had it. Boom, boom. I got to scroll. My finger's getting sore from scrolling. I had it at 80 out of 97. Funny enough, just ahead of Oliver, which is another musical.
There you go. But okay. We'll talk about Chicago. Don't worry. We will talk about it.
That's a shame. Okay. No. you want to start off. Why don't you start? Actually, before we start off, let's do this, because this question came through and I think it's important and I think we should talk about it real quick. Do you predict the Wicked movie will break into or come close to your top 10?
It can't. It's in two parts.
Mm.
That's really what it comes down to. A musical has a very specific structure to it because it is a stage play, right? It has a very specific two-act structure, and musicals are designed that way. So you would think dividing it into two would make sense, except for the fact that you're elongating it. And in order for a single movie to work, it has to also follow that same structure. So you're kind of changing the structure of a musical. I am like 95% sure I know the exact moment that Wicked Part One will end. Mm-hmm. And that is a terrible ending for a film.
Yeah, there's no reason for them to make two movies. I just I'm shrugging my shoulders. I don't think it could happen. I just don't think it could happen. Anyway, let's get into the ranking. Otherwise, this would be a 3-hour podcast. And frankly, John, I don't have 3 hours. Okay. So you're excited. Why don't you start?
Okay, I'm going to start. And you know what? This might be one of my contentious picks of the entire batch. I am going with, for my number 10, I have The Producers, but specifically the 2005 remake of it.
Honestly, the 2005 version is very underrated.
Yes, I agree. I know like the original Mel Brooks with Gene Wilder and everything is like a classic. My introduction to The Producers was the stage play. That was my first introduction to it. So the 2005 version of the film is the entire stage play as a film. And like that really captures it for me. This is a hilarious musical. I mean, you have Matthew Broderick and Nathan Lane together in the leading roles of Bialystok and Bloom. Uma Thurman's in there. Will Ferrell in arguably his most hilarious role of all time.
Mm-hmm. It's so good.
It's so funny. The music is fun. It's for those who don't know what The Producers is about. It's about this Broadway producer and an accountant who realized they could make more money with a flop than a success.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire movie is about making that flop. It's so funny. It's hilarious. The chemistry between Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick, who, you know, did The Lion King together previous to this.
Yeah.
Like, they still have it. It's there. It's perfect. This is honestly just, it's so fun. And that at its heart, yeah, I have some pretty depressing musicals coming up later. At its heart, a musical should be fun.
Yeah. Well, and The Producers, I like both of them. I like the original and I like this one. The original I watched for the first time earlier this year, late last year, but that's a really entertaining movie. Mm-hmm. This one's a little bit more fleshed out. I remember as a kid when this came out in 2005, I mean, I was 13. So, you know, as a kid, but every hotsy totsy Nazi, how myself, like that scene, whatever the words are, was so ridiculous to me as a kid. And I remember like never seeing anything like that. Right. Like as a child, you've never seen that type of humor on screen. And so when I saw that and Will Ferrell's the one who's doing it, I thought that scene was just brilliant.
Yeah. It is. And the thing that I really enjoy about this, and again, it's a theme that you're going to notice, it still has those elements of a stage production in the way this movie's filmed.
Mm-hmm.
It still feels like it feels more like a movie than some of the other movies on my list, but it has that charm of the theater to it. And a part of that comes from the fact that the musical genre, very meta, and talks about musicals a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of has to, right?
Yeah.
It kind of has to. Jay Byrne Aquatic says, check out the musical 1776. Have you seen that?
I've never heard of it.
No, I haven't either. But anyway, I just love that scene where they're on the rooftop for the first time. That was the scene that just stuck out to me as a kid.
Yeah.
What is the name of that song?
That one is. That would be the.
Oh, it's literally called "Heil Myself."
No, that's a different song. That's the one that. That's the one that they sing in the production.
I thought that was Springtime for Hitler.
Yes, and then there's also Heil Myself. I think you're thinking of the Der Guten Tag Hop Club.
That must be it. I don't know. I haven't seen it long enough. But I thought that move. I just thought that scene was so damn funny. Anyway, that's a great one. Good job. Good start. Everybody who hasn't seen the 2005 version, watch them both. Like, watch them both. They're both
hilarious. I mean, the originals got Gene Wilder in it.
Yeah.
Doing Gene Wilder things with Mel Brooks. What more could you really ask for?
Yeah. All right. My number 10 is probably the most controversial one I'm going to have on my list, too. This is a really poorly received Best Picture winner. Really poorly received. And it doesn't deserve it. This movie is so damn wonderful. I have Gigi. I think Gigi is so good, and I think Gigi deserves more credit than it gets. This is always, like, if you sit down and you watch, my whole computer just froze. Like, if you go and you read, like, movies that shouldn't have won Best Picture, blah, blah, this always comes up as, like, one of the worst. It won it in 1958. I forget what it beat. I don't even know if it beat anything all that important, but whatever. It beat some stuff. I just think Gigi, I sat down and watched with my wife when I was going through all the Best Picture winners. And I remember being like, all right, let's just get through this one. Like, hurry up. I sat down and I was like, everything is so entertaining. Why do we not like this movie? Sure, some of the songs are a little outdated and they're a little problematic and all of that. But you have I Remember It Well, which is absolute brilliance. Like, just absolutely one of my favorite musical scenes in a movie. And then you have, what's it called? The whole It's a Bore thing has been stuck in my brain so much. The movie looks absolutely incredible. Gigi's a wonderful character. It's so lighthearted. It's so, so, so lighthearted. And so for anybody who doesn't actually know, because I feel like this movie is one of those movies, like I said, it always just gets brushed under the rug. The movie is about a home, a motor car. Well, this is what it says. A home, a motor car, servants, the latest fashions. The most eligible and most finicky bachelor in Paris offers them all to Gigi. But she, who's gone from girlish gawkishness to cultured glamour before her eyes, yearns for that wonderful something money can't buy. And it's just like that tagline for this movie is exactly how this movie is. Like, it's so over the top and melodramatic and just like, but it works so well because it's one of those late 50s, early 60s musicals when musicals were really just cooking and cooking and cooking. And actually, until people don't realize this, until The Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, won Best Picture. I believe Gigi record for Oscars. I believe, and I could be wrong on this. Yes. So Gigi originally held the record for most Oscar wins without a loss. And then it was broken 2 years later by Ben-Hur. But it won 9 Oscars without losing.
That's impressive.
Which is pretty insane to think about for this type of... But anyway, Leslie Caron is great. I don't actually know how you say her last name. So instead of saying it the way I thought, I butchered it. Maurice Chevalier is great. Like, it's just a fun movie. Now here's the top comment. The opening song, this is on Letterboxd from Sierra993. The opening song is an old Maurice Chevalier scene about how much he loves little girls. Like I said, not every song necessarily stood the test of time. But also when taking into context of the time and what the movie is telling you, is it's not as creepy as it sounds. And it's just going to be, how are you going to like feel about that in your head? But anyway, Gigi's a must watch. And it's a great Christmas movie. So honestly, with the holidays coming up, it's a great holiday. It's not a Christmas movie, but it's a great holiday movie. Like, it'll just put you in a good spirit. Mm-hmm. And I highly, highly recommend it. It is probably one of the least seen of the Best Picture winners at this point, you know, other than everything pretty much from the 30s. But you know what I'm saying?
I've never seen it.
Whew. I mean, I'm curious what you would think.
Yeah, I mean, we have to give it a watch to figure it out.
This is the only 3.5-star movie I had on my list. So I ultimately didn't think it was perfect. Like I said, it has a couple blemishes, but it's just fun. It's just a fun movie. Stamp it. It's way better than My Fair Lady, and it's way better than An American in Paris. That's all I'll say. There you go. All right, what do you – oh, you want me to go 9? I'll go 9 because we're supposed to alternate. I got Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Okay. That's going to take me an hour and a half to type. So when I go to type it in here, I'll wait until you actually start talking, or maybe I won't. I don't know. But anyway, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Actually, John and I are doing our $5 Tuesday on this one for our patrons. That will come out tomorrow. I love Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I see people talking about it in the chat. I wasn't really thinking about it as a musical, but then when I rewatched it, I was like, no, this movie is absolutely a musical and absolutely belongs on a list of best musicals if you're talking about musicals. Look, Cheer Up, Charlie. I get it. That's what everybody's talking about in the chat right now. Song sucks. I understand. It's so corny. It's so cheesy. But at the same time, like, you have to think about back in that era, like, these songs had to be in this movie. This reminds me of like all of those claymation, the classic Christmas movies, the claymation ones like Rudolph and Santa Claus Coming to Town and all that. They all have one really cheesy melodramatic song. These were popular at the time. Cut that scene out. It's literally 2 minutes long. It's total bullshit. It lets us know that we like Charlie a lot. You cut that scene out, this movie is perfect. I love everything else about this movie other than that scene. The songs are fun. Gene Wilder is absolutely iconic. The kids, the way that they get... It's like a slasher movie. The way they get killed off in this movie, it's so entertaining. And the world is just so magical. Pure Imagination is such a great scene. You know, Jack Albertson, getting Jack Albertson in this movie just in general was a great choice. Mm-hmm. He's such a great actor. I just love this movie. This was a childhood favorite of mine. Now as an adult, I'm so happy I just rewatched it probably for the first time in like 10 to 15 years the other day. And it's still... lands. It's so entertaining. It's so good. It just like, I don't know, like everything that should be dated isn't. And so this one for me is definitely just a timeless classic. I think it officially fits. We can say it's a timeless classic.
Yeah, I agree. And a lot of it comes down to the fact that the production for this movie is very, it's set in a time, but like by the limitations of the time that it was filmed and nothing else. Nothing else dates this movie at all. Some of the technology, sure, that's just what happens when you make a movie in 1971. The themes of this movie are everlasting. It's feel good. You just feel so, you just have so much fun watching this movie. It's very enjoyable. It didn't make my list, but it's because I have a couple other more fun ones, I think, in my opinion, that kind of take like a similar
way. Depressing, and now you're saying fun. I mean,
yeah. I said musicals have to be fun. Sometimes depressing musicals are fun, but I meant one of the things with Willy Wonka is it's that introductory musical for a lot of people. Like this is, it's just a movie that you see as a kid and almost every kid sees it. And it's just like ingrained in your life. And they've tried to replicate the success of this original, but you can't.
You can't.
Gene Wilder is Willy Wonka. And Timothée Chalamet does a good job in the Wonka prequel, but it's still not the same as Gene Wilder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I said this on the Patreon, but like I have such a newfound respect for Timothée Chalamet's performance in Wonka because you can see the inspiration he took from Gene Wilder for this. But Gene Wilder is Willy Wonka, and anybody who tried to do it is just whatever. And Charlie and the Chocolate Factory with Johnny Depp was just so weird and unnecessarily weird and just kind of nonsensical. And it just was goofy to be goofy. But in this movie, like everything has a purpose. I feel like the story is really well told and it's just super entertaining. And the songs are good. Like I said, with the exception of Cheer Up, Charlie, the songs in this movie are great. They really
Cheer Up, Charlie isn't even like a bad song.
It's not a bad song. It's just so cheesy.
It's so different than every other song in the musical that I think it catches people off guard. But it's very typical of a musical to have songs like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Anyway, so what do you have as your number 9?
Okay, I'm getting it out of the way. I do have Chicago here. I have Chicago in number nine.
You better be able to talk, man, because I'm about to throw up.
So there's a lot of reasons why Chicago falls on my list. Ultimately, this was the second rated R movie I saw in theaters when the other grandparent took me to it. This is also, like, Chicago as a musical, I quite enjoy. I quite enjoy the musical of Chicago in general. Bob Fosse, genius. His choreography is spectacular. Everything he, like, this is not the last time we are talking about Bob Fosse today. And his, what Chicago does for me, Chicago was kind of like one of my introductions to jazz, which ended up playing a big role in my life. Chicago was probably the musical that inspired me to do musical theater, because I went to the local high school to see a production of it. And then the next year was the first time I was in a musical.
Gotcha.
So, like, Chicago does have, like, this personal attachment to me. I also just really like this movie. It's quite enjoyable. I get why people wouldn't like it. It kind of, like, falls out of this idea of what we were saying about the music can't all be performances, because the music's kind of all happening in Roxy's head.
Yeah, but that's okay. I mean, I feel like with a musical, that's fine. I mean, honestly, Inside Llewyn Davis just isn't a musical. Like, that's what it comes down to.
No, I
you can't have a biopic about a musician, essentially. And I know it's not a biopic, but a movie about a musician can't just be a musical because it had, that's like, I'm Not There is not a musical.
Yeah, exactly. But there's conversation in the chat happening right now how it's devoid of a single likable character. I disagree, because you're supposed to not like characters in musicals and stuff, right? And we're dealing with the crime underbelly of Chicago, this time of jazz, and literal murderers and sleazeball lawyers and stuff. I think there is one likable character, and that is by far Amos. And John C. Reilly's performance in this movie has gone underrated for far too long. He is absolutely spectacular in
can
this
I,
movie.
Can I just say this about John C. Reilly? Because I always like to bring this up any chance I can get for that year. 2002, there were 5 movies nominated for Best Picture. He was in 3 of them.
Right?
He's insane.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, it's insane. You just had that, just has to be stated. So,
yeah.
Ultimately,
Gere, spectacular in this film.
Yeah, Richard Gere not getting an Oscar nom for this always pisses me off. He's so good. I will say right now that this movie for me, it's not that I actually dislike Chicago. I just don't really feel anything for Chicago.
Yeah,
he Had It Coming is the best part of the movie, I think, by far. I don't even think it's really close. And then after that, I'm just like, okay, like, whatever. Richard Gere's great. I think the acting is fine. Like, Catherine Zeta-Jones is okay. I don't think she really was that deserving of the Oscar, like, whatever. Like, for me, it's just kind of like, okay, it was a movie. Okay. Like, it's not my favorite Rob Marshall, that's for sure. It just didn't do it for me. Like, it's not that I hated it. I'd watch it again if somebody put it in front of me. I just found it to be kind of bland.
Yeah, I get that. But you made a comment earlier on in the podcast about how musicals have to, like, if they get that catchy song in your head, like, it's a success.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago has so many of those.
Yeah, so I only have that one. I only have
all that jazz. Literally, Roxy Hart. Cell Block Tango, like you already mentioned. Mm-hmm. Mr. Cellophane. Like, there's so many, such good songs in this musical that just going through it, it goes, like, they get stuck in my head. And I will probably be singing them for weeks to come at this point.
Yeah. All right. I got that coming. What do you have? What do you have at 8?
Number 8, I have The Wiz.
Wow.
I have The Wiz for 1978. This is all fun. This is such an interesting take on The Wizard of Oz, and there are so many reasons why I think it is a very good adaptation of The Wizard of Oz. Production wise, it feels stagey. It feels a lot more stagey than anything else. Sidney Lumet specifically makes this very stagey, and you watch it. Thank you, Jordan. Everyone should love it. If you haven't seen The Wiz, you should really give it a shot, because this is The Wizard of Oz with Motown and funk and gospel. It's so much fun. Diana Ross plays Dorothy. You have Michael Jackson playing the Scarecrow. It's so good. The music is phenomenal. It's a trip. It's an absolute wild ride through, like, this, like, New York-based Oz. It is a little devoid of some of the character from The Wizard of Oz, but it's the fun of the music really propels it. The set design and the costume design in this movie is absolutely spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's fun. Again, yeah. Musicals should be fun. And that is what The Wiz is.
I haven't seen it. I got to check that one out because I always liked The Wizard of Oz, you know, and that was like a movie I grew up on. So I never watched The Wiz, but I should check that out just for at least the comparison. It is such a polarizing movie.
It is.
Right.
And like, I get that. Part of the polarization comes from the fact that The Wizard of Oz does exist. And like, this is just kind of stretching it out a bit and changing it a bit. Mm-hmm. But I think some of the changes that are made for The Wiz are actually really good. I was talking to my roommate after we watched it last night. And I was just saying the fact that originally in The Wizard of Oz, Dorothy is a child, right? And we're kind of used to Dorothy being a more teenage character because of the portrayal in the film and everything like that by Judy Garland. But in The Wiz, the character of Dorothy is 24 years old. And I think that really kind of helps reinforce these themes that are in the book of The Wizard of Oz. This idea of like, you're kind of there. Everything you're looking for is within you already. And you're just searching for it. And you have to kind of have that validation to find it. And I think that resonates a lot more with a 24-year-old character than a 10-year-old character.
Yeah, I mean, I never really thought about that, the age element of it, because again, like you said, I just think of Judy Garland. Like, I don't even think about that. I'll have to watch it. Who else is it? I know, what is it? It's Michael Jackson, Diana Ross?
Michael Jackson, Diana Ross, it's directed by Sidney Lumet.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Nipsey Russell, Ted Ross, Richard Pryor is in the film. There's some names in that movie.
Yeah. I'll have to check it out. I haven't seen it. Just like you haven't seen Gigi. Look at us. We're starting ourselves off.
And Jay Byrne Aquatic here does say 24. Good Lord, Diana Ross looked at least 35. That's because she was 35 in the movie. And it's actually one of the big criticisms levied towards the movie is that Diana Ross was too old to play the character.
Yeah. That makes sense. Well, I'm moving on. I'm going to my number 8. This might be early for this movie. I'm assuming John has it, although I guess maybe he doesn't. I mean, this isn't really a movie that we talk about all that much. Might be a little early, but I don't care. This is where it is. I have The Sound of Music. Do you have it? You're smiling.
I don't have The Sound of Music.
Okay, you don't have The Sound of Music. Okay, no. So we can just ignore your list for the rest of the time. Anyway, John, sorry. I love this movie. I have it at 8. I thought I was going to have it higher. The thing that always turned me off from The Sound of Music is the length of The Sound of Music. That's always like the one thing. Obviously, every single song in this movie is an absolute classic. Every single one. Like, there's not a unmemorable song in this movie, which is insane because this movie is 3 hours of songs. Jordan's about to rip you apart after you put The Wiz and then didn't put Sound of Music. But I love the performance of this movie. The music is great. Christopher Plummer, Julie Andrews, like, obviously it all works so well. The backdrop of like Nazi Germany and all that stuff is just incredible. The thing with me is because of a movie like Cabaret, even though they're so different, that's kind of the reason why I put Sound of Music a little bit lower, because like with the Nazi backdrop, I just feel like Cabaret does it so much better, but they're also such different movies. But that's just kind of why I put this a little bit down lower. And this is really funny. Jordan Alford says, I was an adult when I found out Edelweiss wasn't the Austrian national anthem. What's really funny is I actually went to the town where this was shot. Oh my God, what the hell is the name of the town? I literally was there and it has like a huge mountain, blah, blah, blah. The funniest part is when you go to Austria, they don't like The Sound of Music. Like, they really don't. And like, they make sure to tell you that they don't like The Sound of Music. And I don't know if it's because it does have the Nazi undertones or something, but they don't like The Sound of Music. And they always say like, oh, Americans always want to come here and they always want to go with the, you know, get, oh, Sound of Music, Sound of Music. Like, I've walked through many of the sets, not sets, but, you know, locations of The Sound of Music. And the Austrians who live there, like, do not like to talk about The Sound of Music. Now, granted, they'll take the tourist money and they'll go and they'll put on little shows of stuff. And like, we got, you know, we were on a Viking River cruise. So like when we got there, you know, we ate lunch and they played a little song for us and everything like that, where it was like a bunch of the Sound of Music stuff. It was like goofy, silly, but you know, whatever. Nice. But I don't know what it is. But anyway, all that being said, this movie's just, it's just so many great songs that I just could not leave it off the list. Even if there are other musicals that I just think are better overall and are a little bit more concise. And that's my biggest complaint with this movie. It's still a 4-star movie, still one of my favorites, but that's ultimately what keeps it down here at number 8.
Yeah, the Sound of Music just missed my list. And it is a phenomenal musical. It's a lot of fun.
Salzburg. That's it. Thank you. Sorry. So I had to get into that. Sorry.
Obviously, Julie Andrews is absolutely spectacular in this film. Christopher Plummer also, despite how much he despises this movie and completely renounces it. But it's so good. It is wonderful. It's my mom's favorite musical, so there is a bit of attachment to it. I actually got to see the stage play of it last year, which was really nice.
Oh, nice.
It is just, it's a fun one. It does feel like it is one of those family type of musicals, you know, one that you can sit down with the family and watch.
Just a little bit darker, but never gets quite to the dark level, right? Because you have the Von Trapp children, so that's what keeps it from getting dark.
Yeah, and there's a lot of this idea of identity. One of the things that, like, kind of turns me off of the Sound of Music is, like, the whole love story of it all, which seems wild when we get into some of my other musicals that we talk about. But sometimes I find like the corny love story aspect of it is a little too much for me. But that being said, like you said, all the music in this is absolute fire. It is so good. Mm-hmm. It's very entertaining. It is a bit long, but like that doesn't stop us from watching movies. We watch much longer movies than this.
Of course. Of course. All right. So that's that one. And then my number 7 is the second newest movie I have on my list. And that is Moulin Rouge. I love the 2001 Baz Luhrmann Moulin Rouge. I think this movie is absolutely brilliant. I understand that there's like, I think there's any original music in the movie. It's all covers. The covers are absolutely phenomenal. The Tango of Roxanne is beautiful. So well done. The Like a Virgin scene with Jim Broadbent is one of the funniest scenes I've ever seen in a movie. This is Baz Luhrmann's style at its absolute best. I feel like his style is just cooking in this movie. And it all comes together to just make a super, super entertaining movie. I always love, so maybe I'm a little biased with this movie, but I always love when movies, you know, I talk about with David Lynch and stuff, when they take songs and they make them their own, that are songs that we recognize. One of my favorite things, like, so we were at, I was in New Orleans this past weekend and we went to a jazz club, and it really, jazz club was a loose term for it. I mean, they were pretty much, it was like rap with jazz in the background. And these guys did a cover of Roses by Outkast. Mm-hmm. And it was so good because of the way they mixed it all together and the way it went. I mean, like, people who were sitting at the bar literally were like, I have to stand. It was like a scene from movies. I have to stand up and turn and like, I can't not move to this right now. Like, it was so good. And so I always like when movies do that. I like that when you're at a, concert and they do that. Mm-hmm. And Moulin Rouge is the best example of that. Moulin Rouge takes all these classic songs that you know super well, and it puts its own spin on them. And the story is fun, and it just keeps you going the entire time. The style, style, style. But it's a bizarre, fun movie that I totally love. So that's it. I got it at number 7, the Moulin Rouge.
I've never actually seen Moulin Rouge.
Damn, John, do you watch musicals or no?
I do. I watch lots of musicals. But like, it's one of those ones that it's actually kind of weird that I haven't seen it because I don't dislike Baz Luhrmann movies. Kind of a little higher on his style than I think most people are. But I guess it was kind of like the timing that Moulin Rouge came out was just the wrong time. It was like right before I got into musicals really hardcore. And the fact that it isn't original music also kind of deterred me from it. Because when I was seeking out musicals, I was seeking out stage musicals. And I was seeking out like movie adaptations of stage musicals rather than just movie musicals. And that I think is the one of the things with Moulin Rouge that is interesting into itself is that, yes, it doesn't use any original music, but what it does do is it takes the music and builds it into the story and makes it apply to a musical, right? And it's not the same as those dramas that are about musicians that have music. It is, in fact, a full-blown musical.
Mm-hmm.
But the lack of original songs just like has kind of kept me keeping it at an arm's length.
Yeah, you got to watch it. It's so worth it. And it was when I was in high school, it was my girlfriend's favorite movie and I never watched it. And then a couple years ago, I sat down and I watched it and I was like, damn, it's a shame. Like when you're in high school, you're like, no, I won't watch such, I don't know, loser.
I think that was kind of part of it too. Like, I mean,
it came out at a bad time. I mean, we were 9 years old when this
movie exactly, came out. Right? Like it was right. A bad time for us to just not understand that we can just watch whatever we want.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. What do you have as your number 7?
Something's going to upset you. I have Cabaret.
Oh, that's okay. As long as you have it on your list. I was worried you didn't have The Sound of Music. I thought you weren't going to have this either.
Oh, of course I'm going to have Cabaret. Cabaret's fantastic. But I'll save most of our conversation when we get to...
Yeah, let's not talk about Cabaret right now because I will be talking pretty damn in-depth about Cabaret.
I know you will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's no need. Why 7 though? Like what made you put it at 7 instead of higher or lower or whatever?
When we look at the other ones that I have higher than it, they're either the ones that I have a deeper emotional connection to than Cabaret, or that I think are just better than Cabaret.
Hmm.
And like there aren't many. Right? Like there's only 6 movies above it. And of those, I would say 2 of them are like definitively better films than Cabaret, in my opinion.
So wrong. But anyway, no, that's fine. I get you. The other thing with Cabaret is too, like, I love the music in Cabaret, but I could see why people who are more musical based would be like, I want to go a different route on what I consider to be like the best movie musical, because Cabaret really does toe that funky line. I remember thinking this was going to be like a full-blown Bob Fosse. And obviously it's a Bob Fosse musical, but I thought it was going to be something else than it is.
Yeah. Have you seen the stage production?
Jordan saying he's inspired to do this on Letterboxd. Let's go.
Yes, let's go. Let's do it, Jordan. Have you seen the stage production of Cabaret?
No, I have not.
It's a phenomenal stage production. And the film does such a good job of capturing that aspect. The fact that, again, we said we weren't going to get into it, but we are getting into it a little bit. The fact that, like, what you said about these performances happening on stage, the incorporation that Bob Fosse had to make it so that the stage made sense to progress the plot and really set the tone of the film is, I think, what sets it apart from many other musicals.
It's one of the most brilliantly directed movies ever. Yeah. And I know you're talking about the musical, but, like, it's one of the most brilliantly directed movies ever. And had this not come out the same year as The Godfather, this is probably... generally considered a top 10 best picture winner of all time. And people talk about this movie a lot more than they do.
Yep.
But we'll talk about it a bit more in a little bit. Yep. What do you have at 6?
The other movie from your top 100 that is a musical, I have The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, so you actually have The Wizard of Oz above. I thought you were going to have The Wizard of Oz below Cabaret. That actually surprises me.
No. In the end, like I said, it has the emotional connection, right? Like, I remember having this taped from like ABC as a kid, right? And watching it with commercials and all, running out that tape as much as possible. It's a classic for a reason, and I know it's going to be further on your list. So again, I'll save conversation for then.
Yeah. So it's funny because we're making this podcast very boring at this stage. This is why when we did our top 100 movies, we'd like make each other do a different movie that week. Because guess what my number 6 is, John?
Is it The Wizard of Oz? No.
It's Les Mis. Yeah, exactly. So we literally just rattled off 3 of the movies that we knew we were both going to have. So I obviously have Cabaret and Wizard of Oz higher. John has Les Mis. I knew that this was going to happen. Ultimately, though, Les Mis was one of those movies when I rewatched it for John's when John did it, number 100. I mean, that was 4 years ago now. This is the first podcast John and I ever did on this, on movies. Les Mis and the Descendants was the topic. I love Les Mis. This movie hits. And I know people give a hard time to Russell Crowe and all of that shit. The choice to have it all be music and, you know, they're singing all the time, whatever. Don't care. Don't care at all. I am thoroughly entertained by this movie from start to finish. So I won't talk too much about it now because I don't want to steal your thunder. But yeah, totally. I mean, Les Mis is a perfect movie.
I don't know how you complain about this movie being singing the entire time when that is how the musical of Les Mis is. There is no non-singing dialogue in that entire musical.
Yeah. I don't. Les Mis, we'll talk about it more when we get there. And then you can complain. And honestly, John, probably going to keep this boring.
Oh.
Number 5. It's not East. It's West Side Story. You also have West Side Story. So again, if you're watching along with the ticker at the bottom, this podcast is probably going to be a little bit more enjoyable for you because then you can see the movies that we're putting in, and me and John will talk about them both when we actually get to them. West Side Story is my number 5. So, you know, next time when we do the next time when we do the Ridley Scott movies, what'll be interesting is we're going to have a lot of, you know, crossover. Obviously, he only has such a filmography. Like, there's only so many movies that you can choose from, but we'll be able to talk about, why do you have this one ranked higher? Why did this one make your list? Blah, blah, blah. With this, it just comes down to the fact of like, okay, John, like, I know you have that. I have that. Let's wait a little bit. So yeah, my number 5 is West Side Story. The 4 movies I have in front of it, 2 of them made my top 100. One of them should have made my top 100, should have made my top 100 Redux. And the 4th one, if I would watch it again, it would probably make my top 100. So like the 4 movies that I have in front of West Side Story are simply like 4 of what I think are the greatest movies ever made. So that's really what is keeping West Side Story at 5 and Les Mis at 6, because West Side Story and Les Mis are both, I mean, every movie I've said so far I love, but like, those 2 movies could have been way higher, but the 4 that I have in front, I think, are just pure classics. So anyway, that's what I have.
Yeah. All right. My number 5, which I know is not on your list.
Okay.
You can talk about a movie. We already talked about Julie Andrews and Sound of Music. I have to bring up Mary Poppins.
Yeah, I don't have that.
No. But Mary Poppins is one that, you know what, has grown on me more in recent years than other musicals, I would say. It's one that I, you know, saw as a kid. Again, one of those early musicals you see early on as a kid and everything. And you can't really appreciate all that Mary Poppins is when you're young.
Yeah.
And it is one of those ones that as you grow older, you learn to appreciate a lot more. You learn to understand exactly, like, the sentiment of what characters are really important in Mary Poppins, and that it's not, you know, the children who are just kind of there as your surrogates to get everything going, to see the world. But the children are there to catalyze Mr. Banks, right? Mr. Banks is the character that as an adult you relate to. And what this movie does so well is remind you how important it is to still be a child.
Yeah.
To have that inner child and bring it out. And everything about, like, Julie Andrews, of course, is spectacular in this. Dick Van Dyke's absolutely horrid Cockney accent and everything. So much fun. Like, it's a fun musical that I think really helps harken back onto a time that feels carefree. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes you just have to say supercalifragilisticexpialidocious and go along with it, right? Like, you need to just have fun. And Mary Poppins will always remind me to do so.
Yeah, I mean, Mary Poppins, I enjoy Mary Poppins. I just never loved it. I thought Mary Poppins Returns, I didn't like Mary Poppins Returns.
I never saw that.
Yeah, I didn't like it at all. But the original Mary Poppins is super entertaining. It was just never one of my favorites as a kid. And, like, I don't know. Like, to me, that's like a perfectly fine 3-star movie. And I'm seeing in the chat over here, people are like, we love Mary Poppins. For me, it's just like, it's a perfectly fine 3-star movie. That's really how I feel about it.
I think my appreciation for this movie increased after seeing the stage play.
Mm.
And like, the stage play is longer, it's more fleshed out, it has more songs and everything like that. But when I go back to it, and you see it as a stage play that is adapted from the original movie, it really resonates a lot with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going and seeing this, and there's just this elderly woman who's just like singing along, you know? And it's like, that's the type of power Mary Poppins has, is that it just brings you back to that moment where you just want to be the child again.
Yeah. Well, and that was the beauty of like those old school Disney movies. The live action Disney mm-hmm. movies from the early to mid 60s were just so good. I mean, we talked about when we did Island movie, Swiss Family Robinson, like there was just something so homey about those movies. They didn't take themselves too seriously. And yeah, I mean, her role as Mary Poppins is obviously iconic. Like there's no doubt about that. It's just didn't ultimately end up making my list. Like I said, I like the movie. I just don't love it. Have you seen Fiddler on the Roof?
No. I was going to watch it ahead of time, but it's like 3 hours long. So I didn't.
Trav Herod said Fiddler on the Roof is one of my favorites. That's probably my biggest blind spot. That I haven't seen Fiddler on the Roof, because I feel like all the 70s movies that are important I've seen, and I just haven't seen that one. And it's been on my, I DVR'd it like 2 years ago, literally. It's still on the DVR. I just haven't watched it. Like, I don't know why. I just haven't gotten around to it, probably because of the length. But that's one that you're not going to hear on this list, Trav. But maybe if we both watch it, Gigi will get knocked off. Although I might have to bump Gigi to a 4-star movie just so I never have to take it off. Jordan too. My biggest blind spot. It's crazy how that movie is just like a blind spot for some reason from the 70s.
It's like, I know the music of it. I know the story of it. I just have never gotten around to watching it.
So what do you have at number four?
Number four. And I think this one might catch you a little off guard. I have Frank Oz's Little Shop of Horrors.
Okay, is this the one with
Rick Moranis?
It is with Rick Moranis. Okay, yeah.
Absolutely. This is the last stop at fun we get before we get to my number one, I will say. But this is one of those ones that it's a small cast, and this movie just feels so surreal in comparison to so many other movie musicals. The puppetry and like the physical effects of Audrey 2 and everything are great, but I also think that like Rick Moranis as a leading man, which did not happen very often, he pulls off the character of Seymour so well. He is so fantastic in this movie. Steve Martin as the sadistic dentist, one of the most hilarious roles in cinema history, in my opinion.
I haven't seen Little Shop of Horrors since I was like 14 years old. I couldn't tell you anything about this except there's the plant that eats things.
Yep.
That's all I got, man.
It's so
and
fun.
I know they say Seymour funny.
They do say Seymour funny. Feed me.
I haven't seen this movie in so long that, like, honestly, when you mentioned it, I was like, man, maybe I should have said something more about, you know, maybe I should say. And I'm like, I actually can't talk about this movie. I haven't seen it in so long. I can't even remember. I don't remember the songs from it.
I highly recommend it. It's so fun. And it's, again, like, this is one of those ones that every year in my drama class, we would have, like, in high school, we would have a small like musical theater portion that we would go through, and we would sing the songs from this as this like part of the stage work we were doing. So it does have that personal connection to me too. It's just, this is one that I kind of wish I had an opportunity to be in at one point. It's just so
this was my junior year play, like for my high school. This was the junior year play. So yeah. I have to rewatch it. I've seen it. I feel like I can't say anything.
Yeah, I highly, highly recommend it. Also, Frank Oz like knew what he was doing when he was directing this film. Again, it's kind of like The Wiz, where it does have like a very stagey production to it, but it really works. And it really captures like this idea of this like Skid Row that everyone's at and how downtrodden it is. And it really just focuses on these characters of Seymour and Audrey and how they're kind of like these like forlorn lovers who can't quite get to each other, it's just, it's a charming movie, I think is the best way to put it. It's really charming, mm-hmm. and it feels like it has a feel-good feeling to it.
Mm-hmm. I'll check it out. Anyway, moving on, my number four, I have Singing in the Rain.
We'll talk about
so, that. Yeah, okay, so you have it higher. Oh, the thing is, so Singing in the Rain for me is pretty much the first musical I have on my list that wouldn't be considered for my top 100, mainly just because I haven't seen it in so long. The one thing I do want to say about this, and then we can get to yours when you actually get to it, since we now I know what your top three are. Your top three are Singing in the Rain, West Side Story, and Les Mis in some order. Yes. But when we, the thing with this movie was, I remember when AFI put out their first top 100 list, they had Singing in the Rain as like number five all time.
Yeah.
And I remember people talking about it. This was back, you know, in the internet's in its infancy or whatever. I think this was for the 2007 version, not the 97. It was the 2007 version, not the 97 version. And it was like, people were talking about it like, what the hell? How is this movie? I think it was number four. How is this ranked ahead of Raging Bull, this, that, whatever? And it really just came down to a lot of people hadn't seen this movie. Like mm-hmm. Singing in the Rain had, for some reason, it had obviously the iconic actual Singing in the Rain scene. But it was one of the movies that was higher up on those lists that was really hard to get a hold of. And the thing that blew my mind the most was, out of all of my movies that I have, and this is my number four, this is the second best storyline of a musical ever, in my opinion. The storyline to this movie about the, you know, the transition from silent to talking movies is such a brilliant storyline, because that was such a massive change. And this movie was made right, not long after it. It was made 20 mm-hmm. years after it. That'd be like us making a movie about Y2K. You know what I mean? Like, this was, this is right after. This would be us making a movie about Netflix 5 years from now. That's what they were doing. The songs are great, all of that, but we'll talk about it when we get to yours. I just wanted to bring that up because I feel like people are always kind of, this is always kind of the, I feel like this might be the most forgotten classic in film history. And what I mean by that is, here, let me just pull this up real quick, because I feel like this is worth bringing up. AFI's top 100, Citizen Kane, The Godfather, Casablanca, Raging Bull, Singing in the Rain, Gone with the Wind, Lawrence of Arabia, Schindler's List, Vertigo, The Wizard of Oz. Without a doubt, Singing in the Rain is the least popular of those 10 movies. But now people are starting to hear about it a little bit more, right? And I feel like now it's starting to move its way up. So anyway, I just felt like it was worth noting that. I think it is the most forgotten classic in Hollywood history.
I have lots of thoughts about it, but we'll wait.
See, I disagree. Jordan says Vertigo. I disagree because it's Hitchcock. So everybody will still go out of their way. Like, a lot of people will just watch Hitchcock's filmography, or at least his big ones, and Vertigo will come up.
Yeah. But. Yeah. Anyway.
Is it my turn?
You just did your number four, so you're in your number three.
Yeah. Okay. So I have La La Land. We've talked about La La Land on this podcast before. La La Land for me really holds a special place because, you know, I watched it when I was living in LA, going through all the film stuff and all of that. I really connect with both of these characters a lot. It just brings me back to a time. And it was funny. I was back in LA over the summer for the first time in since I moved away. So it was like only 4 or 5 years, but whatever. First time there in the summer, and me and my one friend, we went out, we drank. This is what we do in LA, right? You go out, you drink, and then you say, hey, let's go watch La La Land. Like, why not? And so I remember watching La La Land, and I knew he was going to go to bed because he was going to work the next morning. And I was like, yeah, I'll just watch the first half. Ended up watching the entire movie. And by the end of it, I'm like crying my eyes out, like dying. Cause it's so unbelievably well-made. And like, it just hits me in an emotional way that, like, I don't know. There's just something about this movie that connects with me and resonates with me more than it's going to resonate with other people. And I'm fine with that. But this movie just hits me on all levels. And moving away, when that movie came out, I had lived in LA for a year. Then I move away from LA and then I go back to LA and I sit down and I watch that movie. And I almost had a newfound appreciation for the movie all over again. Of like, it was the first time that I was watching La La Land being removed from Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. the Dreamer song, City of Stars, the opener, the medley, can't speak, the medley at the end. I just love it all. I really do. I love it all. I absolutely love it all. So anyway, La La Land's my number three. I don't care. I don't care who knows. It's my number three.
So we spent an entire episode of the podcast talking about La La Land previously. Yeah. When we did do our top 100, you had it stand in for something.
Actually, but, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, believe it or not.
Oh, that makes sense. You remember that was the first time I watched the movie and I was a little mid on.
Right. Yeah,
I gave it 3 stars. I'm looking at my original Letterboxd review for it right now. And it literally says La La Land is a fantastic film, but an atrocious musical.
Mm.
But I did rewatch it this past year and I raised my opinion. I actually enjoyed it a lot more on a second watch. However, this is my Letterboxd review for it. Chazelle has incredible vision and utilizes it well in this film. The use of montage is brilliant, and allegory of jazz for relationships is top-notch. If it weren't for the first 15 minutes of the film, this would be a perfect film.
That's so funny. See, I like the opener. It's just kind of like an FU of I'm making a damn musical.
Well, and that's the thing, is like the opener is the most musical aspect of this, in my opinion. Like it's the thing that makes it feel like a musical. But I feel like because of that, it doesn't fit the tone of the rest of the film. But the rest of
what the film I like is- about it, can I say what I like about this though?
Yes, absolutely.
What I like about the opener is normally in musicals, people either sing a really upbeat song because they've never been happier. I've got a golden ticket, dude. Mm-hmm. You know, gotta go crazy. Or they've never been sadder. Cheer up, Charlie. You know, whatever. No. This movie starts with a bunch of young hot people sitting in their cars in bumper to bumper traffic in Los Angeles, the city of dreams, and has one of the most upbeat over the top songs you'll ever hear. Another day of sun. Everything is great. It's such a great opening of when they go through all of the characters and what they're doing and blah, blah, blah. And they're all just sitting in traffic in this actual miserable place that isn't happy at all. And that's what, to me, that's why I actually love the opening. I get what you're saying, where it is a little bit out of place with everything else, maybe, but I love the way it's setting the scene for it's just another day of sun and it's not that great.
But I wonder if that hits you harder as someone who lived in LA.
I think it does. Absolutely. Yeah. And I don't care who knows.
Yeah. I think it's just one of those things that it doesn't quite do it for me. Maybe I'll come around them. Like, again, spectacular movie. Everything past that first 15 minutes is perfect. And I've really come around on La La Land since the first time I watched it, but I don't know. Maybe I just need to watch it again to truly appreciate it. But it was definitely one that I had to consider while making this list still.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's start rounding these out then. We know that we're talking about movies that we both have at this point. So why don't you do your three and we'll get into it.
All right. My three is Les Mis. It's Les Mis. I know it seems weird because it was originally in my top 100. First podcast we ever did was about Les Mis. But in the end, there are two other musicals that I think are better. And I don't even know where to start with Les Mis. I started with it on that podcast back there. Les Mis is musical theater to me. This is my all-time favorite musical. It's powerful. It's this massive, bold character study that focuses on the little things in life, these little relationships, and just building up and the regret. Jean Valjean is a spectacular hero. He's kind of one of the best reformed villains we've ever had. Javert is like my dream role for a musical. He is just such an spectacular, imposing figure who is just torn by this morality within him of like whether or not what he's doing is correct, as he's questioning everything he knows in life. Even characters like Marius and Cosette are very prototypical like love interest characters, but it feels so right. Mm-hmm. And then there's Eponine, who the mention of starts tears welling up in my eyes.
Mm.
A character who is in a movie in the play for a total of 15 minutes has the saddest song in musical history and will leave me a blubbering mess for hours afterwards.
Yeah.
And then you have the fun characters too. And this adaptation of this, Tom Hopper adaptation of the film, is it perfect? No. Is it everything you could ask for as a fan of Les Mis? Absolutely. It delivers. Yeah. The casting is spectacular. Even like Russell Crowe, sure, he doesn't have the greatest voice, and it is disappointing that, you know, he doesn't have the quite the power to really bring out Javert the way Javert should be. But it's just there's so much to it, and it just it hits so hard.
Yeah, for me, it always cracked me up when Les Mis came out how polarizing it was. And the shame of it was Tom Hooper was a victim of his own success after The King's Speech, which a lot of people felt was overrated. It won Best Picture. It beat The Social Network. And a lot of people weren't happy with that. And honestly, in a really crowded year that maybe hasn't aged as well, right? With 127 Hours and Black Swan and Toy Story 3 and like a lot of really good movies. I know I'm forgetting some others too. True Grit.
Did you mention The Social Network?
I already said Social Network. Yeah.
Okay.
So The King's Speech wins that. And then Tom Hooper's kind of a victim of his own success. And it was funny. 2012 was kind of that year, right? Yep. He was a victim of his own success. And then, Catherine Bigelow was a victim of her own success. Cause Zero Dark 30, in my opinion, is a significantly better movie than The Hurt Locker. And she wasn't getting any love either. And then that was when you were getting a lot of pushback. They didn't want to nominate whoever, blah, blah, blah. Ben Affleck doesn't get nominated for Argo. That whole Oscar season was a mess. But when the reviews started coming out for Les Mis, they weren't that good.
No.
It was like Rotten Tomatoes was still in its heyday and it only had like a 76. And I was kind of surprised. I remember me and my friend went and watched it. We were like, that movie was freaking awesome. Like, what are people talking about? Like, there's nothing. And I think what the problem with Les Mis is the fans of the musical are such fans of the musical that they can't separate the musical from the movie. They have it's the book snobs, except these are musical snobs, and musical theater snobs might be worse than book snobs, where it's like they have to sit there and tell you everything that's better in the play. Yeah. And it's one of those where it's like, put the duct tape over your mouth and watch the movie. I don't need to hear what you have to say. Like, shh, be quiet. I'm just trying to watch the movie. And I feel like there is that feeling of I'm better because I know this so much. And that's what makes me laugh with you here, John, because you love the play so much, but you also love the movie. And I feel like there's too many people out there who just wanted to hate on the movie for the sake of it's a movie adaptation of this play that is so hard to do. I don't know what the name of the middle song is. What is it? One More Day or whatever? One Day More. My bad. Sorry. I speak English. I don't speak old English. One Day More is so incredibly well done as the midpoint of that movie. That scene that gives me chills just thinking about it. It just gives me chills just thinking about it. I'm like, oh my God, like the way that they bring all of those characters together. We just watched everything. It's so epic. It's so epic. And obviously the Anne Hathaway scene is the scene stealer.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a brilliant, beautiful movie. It looks amazing. And I just love it. It's such a fun movie. I just want to throw this up there because it always made me feel the Hurt Locker is actually trash. All time stinker for Best Picture winner. But they do bombs, Jordan. What are you talking about?
This movie came out Christmas Day 2012, if you remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I saw this movie in theaters twice that day.
Nice.
That day. I saw it twice. I went with
Jesus to wait on dinner. You didn't have time for him. Like, hold up, buddy.
Yeah. Well, I went with my best friend first thing in the morning to the first showing of it. And then I went with my brother-in-law's family and my family afterwards, like in the evening. And I didn't regret it. It was phenomenal. There are not many times where I'll watch the same movie twice in one day, but Les Mis is one of them.
Mm-hmm. What, so you want to do... We should probably we'll do your 2-in-1. You want to do your 2-in-1 and then we'll do my 2-in-1? I mean, I'd feel weird to go back. I mean,
Sure. Number two, I have a sad story, which should surprise no one considering Singing in the Rain is in my new top 100. But I have West Side Story at number two. We are talking the original. We are not talking the Steven Spielberg remake, which, I mean, in its own right is a good adaptation of the musical. But how do you compete with this original? It's the best adaptation of Romeo and Juliet there is. I mean, you have Leonard Bernstein music. You have just, I mean, as a very diehard Twin Peaks fan, you have Richard Horn and Dr. Jacoby in this music. Like, West Side Story is just absolutely spectacular. It is on another level when it comes to musicals. Like, honestly, like, Les Mis, I've said, is like my favorite musical. West Side Story is in that same regard. Like, it is absolutely spectacular. The music is unbelievable. And watching this film, like, Robert Wise does such a phenomenal job directing this and capturing everything from the racial tensions brought up in the script itself to just the framing of every single dance number and every single piece in this entire thing. It's spectacular. It really, truly is. It's just one of those movies that leaves you in awe afterwards. And people talk about it as one of these like greatest movie musicals of all time. And you're like, it can't really be as good as people say it is. And it truly is.
It is. And yeah.
The music from it is just on another level because it is that Bernstein score. And it is. I knew the music for West Side Story long before seeing West Side Story because I have just seen it performed by orchestras prior to that, because it is that type of music that just deserves to be heard.
Yeah. I mean, the West Side Story, every song is great. And like, again, that's one of those productions that just, again, it's kind of that homey feel, right?
Yeah.
Of like 1950s Hollywood, or what is this? 1960 technically, right? Is it 1960? Whatever. I think it's, yeah, whatever.
The movie came out?
Yeah.
It was 61.
61. Okay. So like it just has that look though. It has that feel. It's so classic Hollywood. And sometimes like classic Hollywood is just what you want to watch. And it's not easy to find those types of movies that are digestible a lot of the time. And this one is so digestible. And the characters are iconic. You know, the songs, obviously. I love West Side Story. And this was one as a kid I never really liked because, you know, I would like roll my eyes, whatever. This is stupid. Why do they have to sing? Why can't they just talk, right? And then I see this happen and I'm like, no, I've watched this a couple times since. And it's so damn good. It really is. And Rita Moreno blows. God, what's her name?
Rachel Zegler.
What's her name? Ariana DeBose blows her away. Yeah. I mean, Ariana DeBose is good, but Rita Moreno blows her away. I'm just saying, it blows her away.
Absolutely. It's just, again, like the Spielberg, I came out of watching that Spielberg remake kind of blown away at how good it was.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just on another plane of existence when it comes to how good this original is.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the simplicity. I really love, we get the overture and it's just like the colored screen. And we get the on-track with just the colored screen. Mm-hmm. Like it feels like a stage play still, but it's this. There's a vastness to it too as we're taken to the streets of New York. And we see these teenagers squabbling and their gangs going after each other. And again, it's Romeo and Juliet. It's one of the oldest stories that we still tell over and over and over again. But it's done in such a way that has so much heart and so much passion. And it's in the music. It's in the cinematography. It's in the acting. It's just overall just such a phenomenal piece of art that still preserves on that 73 years later, we still talk about as just like one of the greatest old Hollywood films ever made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, West Side Story, man. Yeah, I got to rewatch it because now I only have the Spielberg one. I like the Spielberg one. I just thought the Spielberg one was whatever.
It's not the original is what it comes down to.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's fair. I mean, that is exactly it. And then talk about, so you have Singing in the Rain at your number one. You had never seen this before we did our top 100 list.
No. And had I, it would be in my top 100 as it is in my new top 100.
What number is it in your new top 100?
It was kind of low, actually. Hmm. Let me double check here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have Cabaret at 93. I should probably move that up, but I only have
it. Yeah, Singing the Rain, I watched it again recently, and we're talking about it on the Patreon next week, so I'll be watching it again, so I'll probably be wanting to move it up again. But it's currently sitting at 92.
Okay, so not much higher.
Not much higher. But this is, as someone who does what you and I do, and sitting here talking about movies, Singing in the Rain just feels like this epitome of a movie musical that defines everything. It is everything I love about movies. It's fun. It's wholesome. It's looking at cinema and this time period that's so pivotal in history for people like us who talk about movies every week. It's done in such a comical way. I think that just the music is absolutely spectacular. It's lighthearted. It's fun. It has everything you want out of a musical. It has two absolutely spectacular leads.
Honestly, all four of them are so good.
I mean, I will die on the hill that Donald O'Connor 100% underrated in this film.
Donald
O'Connor is beyond amazing in this. Mm-hmm. And Gene Kelly, spectacular. Debbie Reynolds, also spectacular. Gene Hagen is Lena. Like, Lena is such a hilarious villain who's not really a villain, but is this villain. And it's just so fun. And to see this time period of switching over from silent films to talkies with a musical about the fact that musicals are what are happening at this point.
Yeah.
It's there's a reason why this is number five on AFI's top 100.
Well, yeah, there is. And I'm excited to rewatch it for the Patreon next week because I haven't seen it in a while. And I remember being blown away by this movie the first time I saw it again. So to me, and it's funny, it ties in where both of our number ones are the same, right? Like, not the same, but like same type of thing. Cabaret gets kind of forgotten for as good as it is. And I think that's the same thing with Singing in the Rain because they both are a little bit more adultish in terms of like what they are. And I mean, I'll just click mine in here because I have two of Wizard of Oz and I have one is Cabaret. I mean, that's no surprise to anybody if you paid attention to everything from our top 100. That's what I have. But Cabaret and Singing in the Rain are both about topics that you're not just going to sit down with the family and watch. Like Singing in the Rain is not a family movie. The same way Cabaret is not a family movie. And a lot of times with musicals, you do kind of need a family element to it. Like how often do people, unless you are a musical theater person, it's kind of like me with an international movie, but it's like, how often are you going to sit down and be like, I just need to sit down and watch this musical? It doesn't happen that often, I think, for certain age groups. Now, granted, this is two guys talking right now, so perhaps women, that's a different story. But I do just think that there's something to be said about the movies that are forgotten that are great musicals are the ones that aren't family musicals. And they both end up at our number ones. Singing in the Rain for you, Cabaret for me. Because Singing in the Rain, it's not like it's some heavy topic. I mean, Cabaret, obviously, with the Nazi occupation, that's different. But like, Singing in the Rain is not a heavy topic, but it's a topic that no kid's going to sit there and be like, oh my God, they're talking a movie. Like, they don't understand that. But it's a brilliant story. And it's a brilliant movie. And I absolutely love it. But The Wizard of Oz, which I have at number two, that's one of the first musicals that kids are introduced to. It's colorful. It's pretty. Toto, The Wicked Witch, like her Tornado, like it's going to scar you for life, kid. Don't watch it. Scarecrow, Tin Man. It's all iconic. The Yellow Brick Road. The songs are so catchy. It's all so good. But it's something that a family can just sit down and watch. This was our Thanksgiving movie for me as a kid, right? Like the night before Thanksgiving as a family, we would just sit there and we'd watch this movie. And that's what we would do when I was a kid. And you know, none of these other movies on this list, are you really ever going to be able to do that? So I love The Wizard of Oz. I think it's great. I know that, you know, some people say it's a little dated and everything. Yeah, it is. But it's classic Hollywood. It's absolute finest, in my opinion. It's the best movie from the 30s. It's the best movie from pre-1942. Like, I think it's just an amazing, 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 amazing movie. And so you know, I'd watch this movie so much more frequently. I should watch this movie so much more frequently, but it was always my number one musical. And then I watched Cabaret. Mm-hmm. Cabaret is just so damn heavy, and it has no business being able to pull off what it is able to pull off. The MC doesn't even have a name. He's one of the most haunting characters you'll ever see. And Sally is just a phenomenal, phenomenal character in all of it. And like I said, I texted John today around 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock or something. And I said, all right, man, I just watched Tomorrow Belongs to Me. I'm hyped up. I'm ready to go do our podcast. Cause like Tomorrow Belongs to Me is the most, honestly, I really need to do this at some point of like, what are my top 25 scenes in movie history? Mm-hmm. Because Tomorrow Belongs to Me is, I honestly, maybe the most powerful scene in the history of film. And so that's what just does it for me with Cabaret. It just puts it up there, and there's nothing you can do about it. I just love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. But I'll let you talk a little bit about Wizard of Oz and Cabaret, because obviously you had this too.
I think the Wizard of Oz, if we don't include It's a Wonderful Life, is probably the movie I've seen the most times in my entire life.
Mm, fair.
But it never loses its luster. That's the interesting thing about The Wizard of Oz, is that, yes, it's this childhood story. And yeah, it's a bit aged up with Judy Garland being older than the original character from the Frank Baum novel, or from the Frank Baum children's book and everything. But it's a movie that, and what it does differently than these other musicals we've just been talking about, is it's so evil, good versus evil type, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's very, very simple. And again, it's the children story element of it. But when you peel back the layers of it, it gets so much more complex than that, right? Mm-hmm. There's this complexity, and I mentioned it when we was talking about The Wiz, right? This idea that what you're seeking, you already have. You just have to find it. You just have to be mm-hmm. told that it's there and give that little push to look for it. And when a family movie that's aimed at children has the opportunity to express that, like, it's one of the most wonderful things that a kid could learn.
Yeah.
Right. That they can get there themselves. They're always home. If they look at themselves, they have the brain, they have the heart, they have the courage. It's all there within themselves already. And you then take that story and you put it into this exquisitely, as Jordan Alford said it, right? The Wizard of Oz is one of the best edited movies of all time.
Yeah.
It's spectacular. It's done in a way where there's that wonderment, right? You sit down as a kid and you're watching this movie. It's in black and white, and you're like, "Why is there no color?" And then it switches to color. It's a moment where you're like, "This is what film can be."
Yeah, this the is horse the of a different story. Color is one of those moments, man. You're like, you know, you got to think in 1939, they're going, "How the hell are they making the horse change colors?"
Yeah,
how are they doing?
This is the wonderment that musicals bring to people, and that's why this movie that is. Math is not my strong suit. 85 years old now, still holds up today and is still shown repeatedly to people of all ages. It's a movie that, and it's a musical that speaks to everyone, no matter how old you are.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And it's simple, and it's got the fantasy element too, which is what makes it so timeless.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that stuff, that's the more impressive stuff. All that holds up. That's what's crazy. Yeah. Like the fact that like the fantasy elements of this movie still hold up all these years later is what is just so impressive. But anyway, and then Cabaret, John, say your final piece on Cabaret.
Cabaret. I've already spoken very highly of Bob Fosse. Bob Fosse was a genius. And that's just what it comes down to. He had an eye, and it's almost unfortunate we didn't get more film from him, because mm-hmm. what his vision provided is so gorgeous. And yeah. Cabaret, you're not sure where Cabaret is going. And I remember the first time seeing Cabaret. I saw the stage production before I saw the film for the first time. The moment when a little boy comes up and starts singing a Nazi song.
Yeah.
Is the act break, right? It's what you go into intermission with in the stage mm-hmm. production. It is one of the most harrowing moments in a musical ever. because all of a sudden this fun frolicking around Berlin musical is now, oh, I know everything that's going to happen and it is not good.
Yeah.
And the way that Bob Fosse is able to put that into the film and capture that feeling in the film, the claustrophobia, the Nazis like closing in as the film goes on, is spectacular. It's some of the best progression of a feeling in a movie, like not even just musicals, but just in a movie in general, that gets you overwhelmed and you're hoping for these characters. You want Sally Bowles to succeed. You want Brian Roberts to get out. Like, you want there to be happiness, but you know it can't be there at the same time. And it's punctuated by these spectacular performances by Liza Minnelli and Michael York, and Joel Grey is the MC. Like, it's just
Joel Grey is so haunting as the MC in this movie. The thing after that whole scene with Tomorrow Belongs to Me is they get in the car and he turns and looks at me and says, "You still think we can control them?" I mean, it's just so terrible because I say this. I mean, you know, I mean, obviously, on election year, I'm not going to get into politics here, but I say it all the time. Every bad idea, every horrible thing, maybe not every 99% were at one time either popular or considered good, or more. People supported Nazism by the thousands, by the millions in Germany. That's crazy. It's crazy to think about now. And that's what's so brilliant about that scene.
Yeah.
Is you have people from all walks, and you get the one old man who's just sitting there like, what the hell is becoming of my country? It's just beautiful. And all the other songs too. I mean, Money Makes the World Go Round. Yeah. Obviously, Life is a Cabaret. I don't know if that's actually the name of the song, but you know what I'm talking about. There's so many great songs in this movie, and so that's where I end it. But Tomorrow Belongs to Me is just unreal. That's our top 10 movie musicals. Let us know in the comments what you like. I know some people are throwing them in the chat. Throw them in the comments too. Let us know. This way it shows up for everybody to see and we can comment and go back and forth and all that fun stuff. Otherwise, please like this video, subscribe to the channel. In 2 weeks, John and I are ranking our top 10 Ridley Scott movies. Each of us will have our own list. So that'll be fun. A little bit smaller of a pool to choose from. There might be some movies that make our list that aren't even that good. And that's going to be in honor of Gladiator 2 coming out. So that'll be on November 18th. Become a patron if you want. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory comes out tomorrow. Singing in the Rain next week. Then we are going to be doing Black Hawk Down and Kingdom of Heaven. So that's how that's going to be our November schedule. If you want to do $5 Tuesdays. Otherwise, everybody, thank you so much. What'd you think of our list? Let us know. John, enjoy your night. I need to go to bed. How is it 10:36? Bye, everybody.
Sick of procurement bottlenecks, endless back and forth, and last-minute surprises? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly 500,000 businesses to simplify and automate their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement. You'll know whether spend is approved before you buy, and Bill's AI-powered automation helps reduce errors so you can make purchasing decisions with confidence. Plus, Bill Procurement puts everything you need to match and pay invoices right at your fingertips. So dump your clunky procurement process and keep your business moving and growing with Bill Procurement. Purchase, pay, and on with your day. Right now, score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Just go to bill.com/procurement200. Don't wait. That's bill.com/procurement200.